This is John McDonald, a member with Stark & Stark's Employment Litigation Group, with the New Jersey legal update for the week ending July 8, 2005. This past week saw some important decisions on both the state and national levels, which will affect local business, particularly in respect to their relationship with their employees. First, two cases from the New Jersey Appellate Division have shed light on the types of conduct which will be found to disqualify an employee from unemployment compensation. In Morales versus Board of Review, the Appellate Division upheld the denial of unemployment benefits to an employee who resigned her position due to alleged medical concerns, yet had not been told by her physicians that she had any limitations on her ability to work. Ms. Morales had resigned her position and moved to Florida after her physicians advised her that if she relocated to a warmer climate, it would ease her osteoporosis and back problems. The Unemployment Commission and the Appellate Court found such evidence was insufficient to support a claim for compensation, particularly in light of the fact that there was work available if Ms. Morales chose to return to her job, and because her physicians never told her she needed to leave her employment for her medical condition. A similar case of Raggio, R-A-G-G-I-O, versus Board of Review also came down last week. And in that case, the Appellate Division affirmed the denial of unemployment compensation for a six-week period to the claimant after it was determined that she had violated her employer's, quote, no-call, no-show policy, despite the fact that her absence was related to a disability. Specifically, the claimant had reported to work one morning, stayed for 10 minutes before telling a co-worker that she was going home. The following day, she checked herself into a rehab center for treatment for her alcoholism and remained there for 4 days. During this time, the claimant failed to contact her employer to inform them that she was in the program and would not be reporting for work. The court found her actions to constitute misconduct and affirmed the six-week denial of her unemployment compensation. Recent decisions have also impacted the way local employers should think about federal anti-discrimination statutes. For example, the decision in McDowell versus AXIS, that's AXSYS Technologies, reminds employers that even a single stray comment made by an employer to an employee can have serious impact on the company. Here, the United States District Court for the District of Jersey was asked to consider a motion for summary judgment filed by the defendant employer in relation to an allegation that it had interfered with the employee's rights under ERISA. The court denied the motion despite acknowledging that the employer had offered a legitimate business reason for the termination on the grounds that a sole statement made by the employee's former president to the effect that, quote, "I think you've been here too long, you should retire," close quote, was direct evidence of age discrimination and indicated that age substantially motivated the defendant's decision to terminate the plaintiff. Finally, along those lines, the decision in Carraker, K-A-R-R-A-K-E-R versus Rent-A-Center, Inc., is important to all employers using the Minnesota Multifaceted Personality Inventory Test, or the MMPI, which is used quite frequently, or a similar personality test when evaluating employment candidates. Although this decision was rendered by the Chicago-based Seventh Circuit, its ruling may mark an important development in the application of the ADA. This federal act places limits on the use of medical examinations and inquiries as conditions of employment, and it also flatly prohibits the use of pre-employment medical tests. The ADA also prohibits the use of medical tests that are not job-related or have no business necessity. As such, the ADA is looking to eradicate the use of tests by employers to screen out possible employees that have disabilities. In this case, there were three brothers, Steve, Michael, and Christopher Carraker, who sought promotions within their own employer, which was Rent-A-Center. Rent-A-Center requires candidates for promotion to take a management profile exam, which consists of a series of tests that include the Minnesota Multifaceted Personality Inventory. The MMPI often is used to help diagnose certain psychiatric disorders as well, so it has two real uses. When none of the brothers scored well enough on the overall management profile to gain promotions, they sued Rent-A-Center, alleging that the company's use of the MMPI violated the ADA's prohibition against the use of medical tests that screen out people with disabilities. Initially, the district court hearing on the matter granted Rent-A-Center's motion to dismiss. The circuit court reversed the district court and remanded the matter for further proceedings. Specifically, the court said that, quote, because it is designed, at least in part, to reveal mental illness and has the effect of hurting the employment prospects of one with a mental disability, we think the MMPI is best categorized as a medical examination, close quote. This ruling is not binding in New Jersey because it's in the Seventh Circuit, but it is no less important because it may foreshadow application of the New Jersey NJLAD and application of the ADA in New Jersey with regard to employers' use of pre-employment personality tests in the very near future, if not already. Employers using these kinds of tests should seek the assistance of legal counsel to determine whether they may be running afoul of the ADA's provisions and what steps they could take to modify the pre-employment tests or to really lay out a case for why the tests are related to the job, which may act to shield them from liability for using those tests. If you'd like to learn any more about these decisions, or other decisions included in this week's New Jersey Law Update, you can contact me at 895-7286. That's in the 609 area code. Or you can email me at jmacdonald, which is M-A-C-D-O-N-A-L-D, at stark-stark.com. And make sure to tune in next Friday for another edition of the New Jersey Legal Update by Stark & Stark. In the meantime, visit us at stark-stark.com or njlawblog.com for regular updates on important legal developments taking place in the Garden State.